Hello listeners, this week we hear more from Chu as he gives his thoughts on an invite-only pro scene, pay-to-win, changes to foot champs, multiplayer foot, and whether EA will make significant changes soon. We also get the Foot Economist back to discuss the upgrades controversy and the market. I'm your host Ben, and you're listening to the Foot Weekly Podcast. If you haven't listened to last week's podcast with Chu, then please do, but it will still make sense if you haven't, and we're going to start where we left off last week. In terms of the whole pro scene, one of the things that came out of that was this idea that Tass mentioned, which was potentially having an invite-only pro scene. But I thought that was incredible and a slightly odd thing to say, considering that one of the big stories, probably the most amount of hype we've seen for a FIFA event, was because a guy came onto the scene completely unknown and did so well. It just seems a very narrow-minded suggestion. I mean, could you stand up for him on this?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I fully agree. I would say that I like that there's a certain tournament for that where it's invite only. Like, that's why on the, when I had them on stream, I was like, oh yeah, well, there's there was FICWC. I think that's kind of cool. It's like people, it's invite only to certain clubs. I don't think that it should be only based around that, because I do like to see people coming from nowhere and making a name for themselves. I think that's the best thing about FUT Champs, is that you can be a nobody and then become a somebody all in a day, as we saw with DH Techs.
And the other interesting thing that came out of that was DH Techs, obviously, we had him on the podcast, and one of the things that he mentioned was the fact that he was using the likes of Ousmane Dembele in his weekend league team, so a very weak team, and he scraped through qualification, really scraped through it. And then coming into the tournament, obviously, he did fantastically well with these amazing players. And a few of the pros were sort of arguing, I mean, it was a mixed kind of bag of opinions, but they were saying, you know, the quality of team doesn't make a huge amount of difference. And I don't know, I feel like this year specifically,
oh, it does.
It really seems to.
It really does. I think, and that's a whole nother debate, whether it's like, people are like, you know, it's so qualifying and so pay to win, but Ultimate Team, like, because the funny thing, I remember FIFA 16, the complaint was that the good players don't feel good enough. I'm spending so much money on this good team and I'm getting beaten by a gold rare team.
Yeah,
that was the complaint then. And now the complaint is that, like, oh my God, if you get the icons, then you're going to win. I mean, wasn't that the whole point of Ultimate Team? Like, you spend more money, you should want to have a better team because you spend more money. And I think people complain about the pay to win because it's not like people like are paying to win. It's like they've just been grinding FUT Champs for freaking months, and now they have a beast team. They have icons because they've been grinding, so it's not like they bought their team. They literally grinded to their team. I think that's what people are getting confused with, is that as soon as they see a team that's like way better than theirs, oh, that guy paid. But it's like, no, that guy could have probably just been playing the game since day one. So
well, something I am really interested in is, you know, I think there was a realization this year a little bit that people needed to spend. Certain pros, you know, really invested heavily. Of course, Guerrilla did, but, you know, he obviously has the funds to back that up. But plenty of pros did seem to spend quite big. And do you think we're just going to see this, you know, like money ball over time as people try and build up those coins really early on and crack that first month? I think probably makes a huge difference having a really high quality team. I'm wondering whether next year we might see it go huge in terms of the teams we're seeing straight away.
You're going to see that. I think, to be fair, it's only going to get worse and worse, because it's like, yeah, people, this is something that a lot of traders have known, is that, like, traders have known that if you get, the value of players is way higher at the start of the game, and it only can go down from there. So you want to open a lot of packs. If you do open packs, you want to open all your packs at the start, because even if you don't pack anything good, whatever you sell, you'll get more money. So with the pros, that's also a case where it's like, even if they don't pack anybody from their packs, they'll be able to sell people to get the better players early, because the prices for the best players will be low at first before the game is out retail release. So if you get it on EA Access and then you open packs on EA Access, they'll be cheap. And then as soon as the game is out retail, the prices explode. So you can get the best players for the cheapest before the game is out retail release if you get them with EA Access or on PlayStation with the early access if you pre-order. So EX is probably one of the better things EA have done. I would say it's probably one of their most impressive products in the last like 5-10 years. It's a no, if you're actually really into FIFA, it's actually a no-brainer. I mean, it costs $30, right? Which is what, like, things
it's like literally 20, like three, it's like £3.50 if you live in the UK. It's probably similar in the
exactly
in the States.
You'll need to get it for a month. You can the $30 is for a year. You can get it for a month where it's like £3, whatever, and then you save so much on FIFA points. And you getting the game for anyone who wants to like dominate FIFA 19, the best thing is to get the game before it's out retail. And if you're going to spend any money, spend it before it comes out in retail.
Yeah, because also it's so different, obviously, playing with those top players, as we were saying, that you want to be doing that from day one, don't you? You want to be sure that you're kind of adapted to that, as you say.
Exactly.
But yeah, and something which is, you know, maybe getting quite technical in the world of esports, but I'm kind of interested in terms of esports organizations and clubs will obviously want their players to have good teams, and they'll want to put money into their players' teams. It just makes me kind of think, like, well, really, those players own those accounts. You know, we know pros can drop out of the game at any point. Are we going to see kind of clubs and organizations invest big money into players and then just see it vanish if they stop playing? It must be quite a sort of complicated kind of setup in a way, I suppose, with that investment and with the different kind of parties at work, I suppose, in the esports system.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a risk that could happen for esports teams. I mean, I'll say this year has been the year that you've seen, I guess, the most people quit FIFA, I guess, because of the stresses of the game. And yeah, and then the weekend league format, it's a stressful format. I would hope that it would change. I don't know what the solution is, but I think the method that it's in right now, the way it's set up, I don't think it's sustainable long term. I think it's just gonna cause more angst. Like for instance, 3 days, the 3 day weekend league, I'm not opposed to it, because at the same time, since it's a qualification method, 3 days is tight enough that it weeds out the people they're not supposed to qualify, like me. Like, I'm not supposed to qualify, but I just want rewards. So I want rewards, but I'm not in the qualification, so it's weeding out people like myself, like the above average guys who aren't, because weekend league is a pro thing, right?
I think people don't really understand that. And we've talked about it on the podcast this year, how actually you need to be a really decent player to be in the weekend league at all, and there are loads of our listeners who don't, you know, end up in the weekend league and are quite happy playing the other modes. But then again, is there an argument that is harsh excluding people from that?
It's not harsh unless there's nothing else to do. I think that's why. I think that's why a lot of the average and above average people are going to, because it's the only thing to do, because it's the focus of FIFA, it seems like. So if there is other things to do, other modes to distract you, I don't think it would be that big of an issue. Because restricting people, I mean, it's a mode for competitive people. So if you're not as good as them, I mean, whose fault is that? In my opinion, that's how I see it. Because again, and I'm one of you. I'm one of those people. Like I'm good enough to get in it, but it just stresses me out. So sometimes I'm just like, I don't want to play it.
Yeah, and in terms of, you know, if you had the magic wand, we talked about this last week a bit. But what would you do to, I guess, reinvigorate Foot Champs, but also, I guess, the general kind of online gameplay offering? Because I feel like a lot of people have moaned about EA about content and all this kind of stuff. But we've discussed on this podcast quite a few times now. I do think that it is down to things being kind of stale after a year and a half of Foot Champs being essentially the same, and the kind of gameplay offering being the same.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is fatigue. Like, for instance, I don't even think, like, I think I only just recovered from last year's Foot Champs, to be honest with you, because I just got back in it. I took a 3-month break at the start because I was like, I'm just not ready for this, for this stress. So I think it's fatigue. It's I think it's franchise fatigue as well, in terms of just like, FIFA's generally sort of been the same entity. Ultimate Team has been the same entity since, what, like FIFA 12? And I don't know how, for FUT Champs in particular, I can't figure out what's the best way. People always talk about, you know, hey, ladder system. But I always also see that people say that there's a lot of cheating in that. Like,
and also, sorry, on the ladder system, I feel like one of the reasons why EA like this 40-game thing is because, like, it's like Liverpool. Every season, sorry, Liverpool fans, this weekend is going to be my weekend. And people put themselves through it again and again, thinking that they'll get a different result. Do you see what I mean? And that can only last so long, of course, but I feel like that was one of the reasons why it's worked.
Yeah, exactly. Like, again, because it's a test, it's a way to weed out the people who are worthy of going to the tournaments. Like, that's the whole idea. But when you see the packs, again, people want the packs, so they think it should be about me too. Like, I'm above average. I want the packs. I want it to be my way. But at the same time, I'm like, yeah, but even for me, I know it's not for me. And I'm pretty good at the game, but I know it's not for me. So there needs to be a separate way to qualify. Because I feel like if you take out the constraints, the problem is that people will cheese the system in terms of like, it, like let's say it's like a week long thing where people can qualify. Then people will like find a way to match up with certain people, yada, yada, yada. People will spend their whole time like make sure they match up with somebody they know they can beat. Like, I don't know if this is a perfect system. So I don't know if I can contribute if I don't know what that is. But the problem with the way it is now is that it's literally gonna, it's physically draining people, I think. Even the pros, I think it's just wearing people down. I think it's emotionally just like getting the better of them because you experience highs, you experience lows, and just like just the constant rate of matches, things like that. So it could lead to, if it's not changed, I mean, I don't know if it's, I would hope it's changed for FIFA 19, but I would say, in my opinion, just from the way I can see the company, I wouldn't think they would change it for FIFA 19. I think it would take another year. The thing with...
Wow, that's quite a big sort of statement, because I don't know. They've already started to change it a little bit with the change in qualifying, and we saw Madden change the length of the weekend league. And, of course, it's going to be the end of weekend league-based qualification. So do you not think there might be a chance that we could see something sooner?
The one constructive criticism I have of the company, when it's a company I loved working at, it's a company that's changed my life for the better. Learning from coin selling, and some people are listening, I was the one that, from the communicative side, I was the one that handled, you know, the stopping of coin selling at EA from the communication side. And one thing I've learned is that it's not a proactive company. It's more of a reactive company. So things have to get really bad for them to change what's working, because people want an extra day, they say, right? Everyone's like, oh, we want 4 days. Yeah, but you're still playing the games in 3 days and you're playing them. So on the numbers, like if somebody is up top of the A, looking at the numbers, it's like, okay, they want 4 days, but they're playing it and it's working fine. So why do we change anything? That's how you have to look at it. Let's say it's somebody who's not looking, who doesn't see the Twitter chatter, because then as an exec, you're not going to always have time, to be honest with you, to see what, you know, a David Myler's tweeting, what a Castro's tweeting, right? You won't necessarily have the time because they have busy lives. But one thing that doesn't lie is the numbers. And one thing I've learned at EA is watch what people do, not what they say. Like when people tweet things, it's just like, there have been times, you know, if people remember RIP FUT, the infamous hashtag that happened in FIFA 15, RIP FUT, RIP FUT. Like, I'll be seeing RIP FUT on Twitter. And then you had
Fix FIFA, didn't you, this year?
Exactly. So I would see RIP FUT, and I can see the usage numbers in FIFA, and it's just fine. I'm like, wait, what? So everybody's spamming RIP FUT. People are putting in the you know, the YouTube videos, things like that. But even the people making the YouTube videos are still playing FIFA. So they're still adding
to the people are still going to watch someone talking about that. So surely they're interested.
Exactly. So it's like in Fix FIFA, you know, I got a lot, because a lot of people were expecting me like, oh, you know, Chew, get behind it. You know, oh, of course you won't, because you used to work at EA. I'm like, well, I mean, one, I'm not getting behind it because you guys aren't going to get behind it. You act like you are. And I broke down their arguments, and I was like, guys, this is cool, but like, Black Friday is going to come and you guys are going to buy all the lightning rounds. So, and I know because I've seen it, because I've seen,
sure enough, you know, we talked about their earnings just earlier, you know, massive increase on last year. So you wouldn't suggest, I mean, maybe there are some people in the community who are holding back, but really, in the grand scheme, it's just not big enough, is it?
It's in the grand scheme of things, it's like, I'm not saying that like every single person who supports Fix FIFA is going against it by buying packs. They're not all buying packs, but it's not going to be enough to sway anything. I could go on a rant for every day, and I'm just people need to know that I'm just not a ranting person. I don't enjoy ranting like online. Like, I think it's, I just don't like it. I think it's kind of silly. I could do that, but that's not going to change the fact that people see a shiny pack and they open it, and that's what a company like EA has to look at. Because you could tweet all you want, but if your numbers show that you're still doing the thing that you're complaining about, what are you doing? You're playing yourself. Like, what, like, you're seriously playing yourself. Like, and I told Fix FIFA, I'm like, this is great, but if you are not putting FIFA 18 in the trash, then you're not helping your own cause. So why should I even help you? You literally have to not be playing FIFA 18 if you want the things that you want. You literally, because like I said, they're more of a reactive company. Things have to, like in coin selling, the reason why I was going back to coin selling is that things have to literally fall apart to show a big enough problem where they need to change it. And when people are like, right now, people are saying FIFA's dead. I'm like, all right, yeah. From an entertainment point, FIFA is dead. Like, I don't want to watch FIFA, so it's dead. FIFA's not dead. And the reason why I know it's not dead is because EA haven't had to make a drastic change, in my opinion. So maybe, you could look at the changing the Silver 2 qualification. I'm not 100% sure why they did it, but maybe that brings people to play more, because it brought me back, honestly, because I'm like, all right, I can qualify, but I can do less now. But people are still playing the game. I'll pretty much guarantee people are still playing the game in a lot. Like, in terms of, like, it's still looking like, from the numbers point of view, it's still looking like a healthy game. People are not watching it as much, but at the end of the day, and everyone's like, oh, man, Battle Royale games are taking over. Everybody's playing Fortnite. Yeah, you're watching Fortnite and you're playing it. But at the end of the day, if you love football, you're still going to want to play a football game. It doesn't have to be now, but when the FIFA 19 hype starts and there's a new season of football and the World Cup comes in, you're going to, like, Fortnite won't give you that. Like, and I think Fortnite's an amazing game. I think they're doing everything perfectly right now. And yeah, it's taking away time from FIFA. Yes, that is true. Taking enough time away from FIFA that EA has to scramble? I'm not 100% sure, because that's why I'm saying you have to get mad at Konami, because there's no other game that gives you the satisfaction of playing football. So,
and one thing that I wanted to discuss on this Fortnite resurgence. I mean, it's a surgence, really, isn't it? It's just come out from you know, nowhere, to be honest. One of the things we discussed recently was maybe the lack of, would you say, cooperative elements in the foot scene. I mean, yes. I know there's a lot to be said for solo play, but pro clubs has really died a death over the last few years, and there's nothing really for people to kind of do with their mates in that kind of sense, you know, in a Fortnite sense. And we've just got, I mean, I've mentioned this idea recently, but I'm just keen to hear your thoughts. Could we see some kind of co-op mode, or possibly even, you know, my dream of just plugging it shamelessly at the moment, but having a, you know, like a five-a-side foot system where get to play as one of your cards?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would like. I think Pro Clubs needs to be an ultimate team for it to have the care that it deserves. I mean, I think 11v11 might be too much in terms of just like how many people you need to get together to have it happen. But
as well, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. So yeah, if you dial it down to 5-on-5, but you still have 11 people on the pitch, I think that's what I want to explain. Like, I think you still need the 11 people on the pitch, but...
Oh, so you're saying it's still... Because I was thinking literally like a FIFA Street style little mode within the game, but you're saying you kind of get to control a couple of players.
I mean, I'm saying players, in terms of what is more likely for EA to do, I would think they'd be more likely to just do 11v11 with less people controlling versus make a whole separate five-a-side thing. I mean, five-a-side would be nice, but I'm just looking at what is more possible.
And I suppose you could kind of control, because it would be outfield players.
Yeah, it'll be...
10 outfield players, and then you'd have 5 user-controlled players, so they could switch between 2 players, maybe?
Yeah, or even like 4v4, where it's like one guy is any, and then certain guys or certain positions. I think 5-on-5 would be great. Exactly. I'm just trying to see is like what is more likely, what would be more feasible for EA. But yeah, 5-on-5 would be sick, because it's like, in terms of like esports, in terms of that, like what I want to see is I want to be a fan of like a team, not necessarily just Gorilla, not necessarily just TAS. I want to see, I want to be a fan of Gorilla, Shells, and 2 other Unilad guys and get real hype about that. So I think collaboration is something that's been missing from Ultimate Team in both sense. In terms of esports, I would rather see, because I think that would show more skill, is if less AI control and more player control was a determining factor and see who is the better team, right? So I think there's something missing there. And also, what I personally want to see in FIFA 19 is a lot of things that has been happening in FIFA Mobile, where like in FIFA Mobile, you have you can make your own league. So I can make my own league. You can make your own league. And then everybody has like a league that they're part of. And all right, if I buy FIFA points, this is what happens to FIFA Mobile. If I buy FIFA points, we all get coins. Like we get like 5 to 10K coins, let's say, depending on how many FIFA points I buy. So I'm contributing to my friends. We play against, every day we play against another league. And you have basically whoever scores the most goals basically wins as a group. And then whichever team wins, we get certain in-game credits. So what that would look like in Ultimate Team is that like if we work together, we play all our matches, so it gives us more incentive to play. Because if people are depending on you, you have more incentive to contribute. So let's say my team beats yours, and then we each get 3 packs or something, or four or five packs each, 4 25K packs because we won. And then that gives you more incentive to play because you're like, I'm getting rewarded and I'm helping my team and I'm contributing with my friends. Like I'm not necessarily playing with my friends, but I'm part of a team with my friends. I think that's something that's been missing where it's like collaborative efforts will definitely take the game into more engagement if people are working together for a common goal.
Yeah. And not only that aspect, but I imagine as someone at esports events, it'd be so much better to have a team dynamic to enjoy and to discuss the kind of, I suppose, like, you know, the rumor mill, the transfer gossip, all that kind of stuff is like heightened. Who works well together? Who can play well in, you know, what kind of setup?
Exactly. And that's why I watch football. Like, I was telling the guys at Top Order TV, like, my dad is obsessed with tennis, but I could never fully get into tennis because it's just one on one, really, for the most part. And the reason like football is like, oh yeah, how does this guy work with this guy? How is this guy contributing to the whole balance of everything? How balanced is the team? And I want to see that in esports where it's like, oh, like Harry and Boris are really good, but do they work well together? Does Harry get annoyed with Boris? Does Boris get annoyed with Harry? Like, is Harry's a better winger, but Boris is better in the midfield? Like, how are they going to balance off of each other? When they have Agi, is Agi the best defender? That kind of thing. I want to see more of, I think I can get into that a lot deeper because I think people have a deeper engagement if they're more into the team because that's how football is. You're not necessarily in for just a player. You get a better feeling when you're in for the whole team.
Yeah, just to finish up, I want to bring up an email that came in to footweekly@mail.com. You can email us if you've got anything to say on anything we discussed in the podcast. A new thing as well, if you're listening on Foothead, if you go to the bottom of the page where the comments section is, you can upvote and downvote various stuff or leave a comment. I'll leave a few things there for you to kind of discuss and, you know, make merry on that. But this particular person emailed in and they said, in summary, he's basically saying people take FIFA a bit too seriously and winning a bit too seriously. And if you take a step back, don't worry about losing. Just think about the way you're playing and the systems you're using and also playing in a way that you enjoy watching football. As soon as you kind of get down about losing or that becomes the most important thing, then just take a step back and come at it again another time. And he's saying he's thoroughly enjoying FIFA and is not having any of the complaints that most people are. And he's been playing FIFA since it was started. He's a Foot founder. So I think there is a lot to be said to just kind of realizing when it's too much, taking a break, but also maybe enjoying your own kind of experiments, playing around with things. Chipboy, do you have any particular things that you like to do to kind of maintain interest in what's going to be maybe a leaner few months or weeks maybe over the next?
I've got a weird thing where I just like to, sometimes gameplay like stresses me out because I just want to win, right? I can get very competitive. So I like the way that guy's looking at it. I wish I could do that too. But at the end of the day, I think that's the hard thing about FIFA is like, it's the pride of losing at football and video games at the same time. So it's a special kind of rage. I kind of just like to sit down and just like slowly prune my, not prune, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like manage my club. Like I'll just sit there and just go through and be like, oh, do I want this? I'll go through my club one by one. Like, do I need this guy? No, yes, that kind of thing. Like, will I need him in the future? I could sell him for this, that. And just like slowly, like it's very peaceful. I put some music on, I'll put a podcast on, I'll just slowly go through my club, plan out what I want to do next with my squad. Like just like, laid back squad management is probably like my most relaxing thing. And also just like doing a casual SBC.
Yeah. And I do, you know, forget and sometimes, you know, have to remind myself and go back to it. But there is something really satisfying, isn't there, about doing an SBC particularly cheaply.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just getting it right and managing to do it very cheaply and then getting a nice reward at the end as well. Exactly. Have you had any particularly good pulls this year from SBCs? Just to
my SBC pack list has been honestly 100% garbage. it's bad. I don't know what's up with my pack list.
I was trying to end the podcast on a high, but you know.
I will say on a high, my best pull of the year has been Prime Overmars. So that's been the highlight.
Oh well, that's not bad, is it? I mean,
yeah. Prime Icon, I feel satisfied.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And so I think on that note, Gio, it's been an absolute pleasure. Always great value and some interesting insights. So thanks very much for joining us. It's been really good.
No problem. Glad to be on and hope to be on again.
Thanks very much. And of course, you can follow Chew, but I'm sure you know where to follow Chew. Chewboy on Twitter.
On Twitter, it's Chewboy. On Instagram, Chewboy. On Twitch, it's Chewboy7. That's Chuboi. On Facebook, it's Chewboy FIFA.
Great. Thanks, Chew. Look forward to having you on again soon.
Nice.
So Chew's gone, but Jamie will be up in just a second on those slightly controversial upgrades and also the market, and I'll be telling you why I think an 85 rated icon is a real endgame centre back. But while you're waiting, why not subscribe? You can do that if you're listening on Foothead by following the links underneath the embedded podcast on the website, but you can also do that by just searching Foot Weekly in your podcast provider of choice, and you can also just go to footweeklypodcast.com/subscribe if you want to find out more. So Chewboy's left us, but that's not the end of this week's podcast. We've got Jamie back, which is nice because he had to dash off last time. And also I can apologise for yet again forgetting to introduce you. Sorry about that. Becoming a bit of a theme. It's because you're such a stalwart of the Foot Weekly scene.
Yes,
you're just always there. So
yes.
I just never think of it. But yeah, it's been, since the last podcast, it's not been too long because we're recording this sort of earlier in the week because I'm going to be going away. So we just wanted to get some chat about the upgrades in because we've seen them recently. And I think on the whole, they're pretty much identical to how it worked last year. But we don't have any downgrades.
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, all sorts of fan theories about why they might not be doing downgrades this year, but I don't think we have an actual confirmed reason, but I saw some people making maybe some not so well-informed jokes about them not wanting to downgrade their cover star, but I don't want to go there because that seems to be a rather touchy subject on Twitter.
Cool. You think your tweet might have been like...
Yeah, I mean, so when I was saying that some people were making some maybe not so well-informed jokes, some of the... I was referring to myself. I made a joke about that on Twitter. And it was actually interesting when the tweet did pretty well. I got picked up by football Twitter and got a little bit of traction. But the replies got really, unsurprisingly, really toxic. I came back about a day later and I noticed that all the retweets that were on the tweet, which had, it accumulated about 100 retweets, all the retweets had been reset to zero. Which was, I just thought, kind of strange. And then also, I noticed it, and I think I noticed it quite close to when it actually happened. And then through that next hour, I actually lost 125 followers. Just sort of randomly. And I mean, I don't know, day and a half since I actually tweeted that. So I don't know if it was somehow a delayed backlash from me tweeting that, or I'm not really sure. I just thought it was sort of strange. But the
likes, you could have 100 and something Ronaldo super fans that would unfollow you.
It could. Yeah, it's absolutely.
Did loads of people get, did everyone who retweets to get banned and they were bots?
I don't know. The mystery. I tried to reach out to Twitter support as well. I was like, hey, what's going on about this? And no one online had experienced this at all either. Although some people I asked r/Twitter on Reddit, and they were talking about how there was they're testing out this thing on different creators and influencers where they actually don't show the retweet numbers of tweets that are controversial, that people can somehow make up their own opinions about stuff. So I don't know if that was actually a weird little beta test that they just kind of threw at me or what, but.
Actually, that's quite possible. I definitely saw that. But have you got them for the rest of your tweets?
Yeah, I have them for the rest of my tweets. But maybe it was just maybe it was the one that was particularly controversial. I don't know. I really don't know.
That's strange. Yeah, good point. So let's move on to the actual upgrades, because there's more controversy involved. Because a lot of people were expecting things like a Salah week for upgrade, Sané moving up to 4-star skills. And that didn't happen. So there were the skill upgrades also came out as well as the sort of player upgrades.
Right.
And the fact that we didn't see those things is not surprising because all of this stuff is taken from the head-to-head player database, right. And those things hadn't happened there, so they weren't going to happen in foot. Mm. At least that's what you'd assume.
It doesn't necessarily translate to the actual role and the ratings and the stats.
Yeah, picks, exactly. So a classic example of this would be Salah. I have his one to watch. He's a very good player. Not on the weak foot, as we just said, but everything else, he's really, really good. And he's surprisingly strong, especially I've put finisher on him, but I was expecting to get even more strength with the upgrade. Because if you look at his 83, he only had about 63 strength, I think. And then on head-to-head, he had...
61.
Oh, 61 even. Yeah, so even lower. Yeah. And the upgrade that he was going to get, according to head-to-head, was going to be going up to 76 strength. Unfortunately, they only did him... Well, they did him dirty. They moved him up to 66 strength, which is decent, but I mean, it's nothing.
Definitely some disappointed one-to-watch owners.
Yeah, I was expecting to have this one-to-watch Salah, who, according to that upgrade scale, would have had, like, you know, with finisher, he would have had, like, 90 strength. And considering the mad strength that Mane had last year,
right?
I was thinking that wasn't exactly impossible. But yeah, that didn't happen. I mean, it's a good point. I don't think we're going to really see throughout these upgrades the massive upgrade that they could have had, which is a bit of a shame. I'm not sure why they're doing that. Maybe just to sort of have nicer inform items.
Yeah, save room for team of the season, maybe. I mean, I mean, some of the upgrades were definitely substantial. We saw someone like Lucas Leiva, get plus 19 pace. Like, there's definitely some stat upgrades where they... I mean, that one looks sort of more like a mistake that they made in the first place and they were just correcting it. But, I mean, some of them were pretty substantial. Someone like De Bruyne, for example. I mean, he's one of the guys that I think was a highlight from the Premier League, at least, you know, with his plus two that carried over to all of his informs and the five-star weak foot upgrade. I mean, that's going to be his team of season, or team of the year, rather, is going to sort of cemented itself with that five-star weak foot as an end-game card.
Yeah, that would be really nice. I think weak foot is a huge sort of deal this year, actually. Yeah. It's really important. But in terms of the upgrades we saw, obviously, informs also got an upgrade, so there are some quite nice boosts on people like Fernandinho, got quite a nice boost to his inform. A couple of other players, Milinkovic-Savic also got himself a really tidy skill move upgrade to 4-star. So he's 4-star, 4-star, and he's obviously got an upgrade on his card as well.
He likes really nice. An inform next week as well.
In fact, he might already have one by the time you're actually listening to this. We'll discuss more about Team of the Weeks, including the last week's and this week's, very shortly. But it's an interesting thing because I'm my slight frustration with this whole thing is that it doesn't really benefit the lower rated players, because imagine you have like an 82 rated player.
Mm-hmm.
Someone like, I don't know, Lozano, I guess, is a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, those players get upgraded, but they're below their informs when they get upgraded. So the inform doesn't go up with that.
Right.
So that's kind of slightly disappointing, and it is one of the reasons why I'm not sure. I'd like to see the lower rated informs and lower rated players get more of a boost from through the upgrades, because it's mainly just a list of really high rated informs that have been boosted.
Yeah. There's also, I mean, sort of going off that, there was some frustration with, you know, with the way that EA handled the inform upgrades this year. I mean, they seem to sort of establish a sort of gerrymandered kind of system for upgrades last year, and I think we sort of figured it out. I mean, there's a couple of exceptions to the rule, but you know, people sort of figured out that it was, if you went over an inform upgrade tier, then your inform would get upgraded and all that kind of stuff. Not worth rehashing at this point, because they've seemed to completely scrap it, or at least have been very willing to make exceptions to it. You know, someone like Sun was an example of people that, given the boost to his actual non-informed, people were fully expecting that his informed would get boosted, and they just didn't. Which was just, I mean, it was frustrating, because I mean, there's no transparency from EA on that front. I think that's something that could be, like, I guess, useful. Or, I mean, I would understand why, you know, it's not, again, like, not that important for, you know, the general body of players to know exactly how their informs are going to get upgraded and stuff like that. But
I don't know, though, because if I've got some of these players and I've seen someone's got an upgrade and I'm looking at it, I'm like, wait, but why didn't Song get an upgrade? Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think for a normal player, it's something that would be slightly confusing, possibly.
Yeah, and I honestly don't really understand the reason for EA not being transparent with it. I mean, I guess it leaves them a little bit of wiggle room in terms of, like, you know, someone like Salah, for example. Like, they... say they're leaving room for his team of the season card, and they just, you know, didn't give him that huge boost to his, like, head-to-head stats for whatever reason, because they didn't want to, you know, make his potential, like, for example, the player of the month that's probably coming up, which we'll talk about in a second. They don't want to make that card absolutely unplayable, right? Like, I mean, I don't know. I really don't understand why they wouldn't be more transparent about it. I mean, some of them, like Sun was another example. Jesus was someone who, like, given last year's upgrade system, sort of got a boost to his card, given the boost to his non-inform. There was just some strange ones, and there was a little bit of friction in the community because of it, but, you know.
And there was the thing with the man of the match, of course, with Mane.
Oh, yeah.
We might as well move on to that now, actually, because there's an interesting bunch of man of the match cards, but that Mane didn't seem to get upgraded above his player of the month, whereas the Salah did.
Yeah, that was a strange one. I mean, like, it's another just kind of like weird sort of inconsistency there. I mean, for those that don't know, that in Salah, when he got his most recent inform, his player of the month card was rated 89, and his most recent inform card was rated 87. And then we were all expecting his inform card to be rated 88, but it actually jumped over his inform card plus 3 ratings to a 90, which was just, like, at the time, that was like a crazy jump for, you know, a card of that rating at that high, because usually at that high rating, you only go plus 1. Whereas someone like Mane, then, you know, if we're, you know, in theory following the same pattern at his level, he was in the exact same setup between his inform and then his player of the month card. And then when he got his man of the match, he was just upgraded plus 1 so that he was 1 rating below his player of the month card. So it was just like in the exact same setup, it was just like a completely different outcome. It was just sort of strange. Confused a lot of people.
I mean, it's great to see this bunch of man of the match items. That it's it's a large amount of cards to drop in as man of the match.
Yeah,
but yeah, very confusing about that. Yasir, if you're listening, you know, our DMs are always open. It's just slightly frustrating as well, because you look forward to a particular card and then suddenly it's not what you expected, or you maybe got that card because you thought, well, he's, you know, it's going to be a while until another card supersedes that card, right, if that makes sense. And then suddenly this card comes along, it's better and it's tradable. I mean, I think they should be more consistent, just because it's just going to save everyone a bit of angst.
Yeah, it was also kind of a kick in the guts for the player of the month owners for Salah. I mean,
he was a central card, wasn't he? But
yeah, that's fair. Maybe that had something to do with it. That could have had something to do with it.
So this man of the match bunch, quite nice. There's a few strange positions, like Manuel Fernandez getting a left mid. He's a bit of a legend. Last year, his team of the season was amazing. And Ivanovic getting a right back card. Obviously, renowned for his days at right back at Chelsea, but with 66 pace, he's not someone you're going to be using there, I don't think. Mm. Nice to see the human flame that is Will Grigg in orange as well, which is
unbelievable.
Fitting. Also, for me, probably one of the best cards just for his link ability is the Brazilian Fred, who plays for Shakhtar and will get a nice link to the current second in form Marlos, which is out, which is a really, really nice card to use and really good fun if you want someone to play about with.
Right.
So the combination of the two could be quite nice. Fred's a very, very quick, should be really, really nice. 85 pace and 79 defending, which is as well as 85 dribbling. So he's a perfect box-to-box man. Done for steroid abuse a few years ago. When you use him in game, you realise why. Anyone in there you want to pick out, Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose I'd want to pick out Immobile, especially with the most upgrade that he just got with the ratings refresh to an 87. A former self, a FIFA 17 former self, would have definitely been all over that card. I mean, he's almost like a team. He's like a third in form, in like a reincarnated third in form Higuain. Maybe he's more similar to like some of Icardi's later in forms, but. Yeah, he actually looks like a decent card. If he had 4-star skills, he would be a top tier card. Unfortunately, he's sort of hampered by that 3-star skills. But maybe his team of season is something to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely. But then you got Griezmann, who looks really good. Gundogan, obviously great, and Werner again getting another special item. Not someone I want to face any point soon. And Bashuai, I've heard really good things about as well.
Yeah, I've actually played a couple games against him. He's not super like agile and difficult to defend, but if he gets an open look, he's good for a goal.
And Willian and De Gea are probably the last players of note in there, and I think everyone knows what they're about. So let's move on to talking about how these upgrades and goings on have actually affected the market. Seemed quite similar to last year, actually.
Yeah, it was almost a carbon copy of last year. It was the typical sort of like, you know, you want to sell into the hype, sell your upgrade investments into the hype. Because, I mean, if you think about it, the number of people that are investing in these upgrades, even if it's spread out amongst, you know, dozens of candidates, as soon as they get their upgrades, or even if they don't get their upgrades, most of those people are going to go, okay, like, this is the time to sell, you know, time to unload. And there's just not going to be that many people that are going to go out and buy it. So the supply just overwhelms the demand, and you see quite a substantial drop in the price. And it happened literally almost every single player, unless the player got some sort of like crazy upgrade that we weren't expecting. Like, and I actually can't even think of that many examples of that happening where like the upgrade superseded the expectations. And another thing too, I mean, we've talked about this in previous pods, so I don't want to hamper on too much, but these upgrades are not as substantial as you might think given their overall boost. And that's something I think is thrown off a lot of people. Debal is a good example. Someone like himself, he's not, even though he's getting a plus one, it's not like all of his stats are getting boosted to the effect of a plus one. Even if you go into some of his, I mean, even his face card stats might be going up plus one, but if you go into his actual in-games, they might not even be boosted. Like, you know, if a plus one was added to a shot, which it was, you know, if you go in, there might be only like a plus two finishing or just something random like that, and that doesn't necessarily apply to like the rest of the stats. So it's really not that substantial of an upgrade. And if you are listening to this and there is still more time before the next rating refresh, you know, I would make sure that you want to list up your informs and get them out of your clubs before the actual release of them, because again, it really just followed the exact same blueprint as last year, where the prices dipped pretty hard when the actual the upgrades dropped.
But a good time to buy, I guess, if you're in the market for any of these.
Right, yeah. Actually, you can actually make a pretty decent amount of coins flipping if you were...
And I mean, an example was De Gea on Friday. Obviously, he got an upgrade to a 91. A lot of people panic sold their 90 De Gea. It's always been the case, every time upgrades have happened, that the previous like low-rated card would actually rise to a very similar price in the end to the upgraded card, because the actual quantity out there on the market just isn't that high because they go out of packs.
Yeah, especially a high-rated one like De Gea, where it's not that big of a difference. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then obviously got his man of the match later, so the 91 went out of packs.
Right.
Jamie, what's going on in the coming kind of month or so? What do people need to watch out for?
We're likely to see Player of the Month the second week of March on the 9th. You know, obviously following the same schedule as usual, coming out the second Friday. You know, that's probably going to be Salah. The game on Thursday, this coming Thursday, depending when you listen to it, if that counts between Man City and Arsenal, if Aguero puts in a phenomenal performance, he could give Salah a run for his money, but he would need, at least in my opinion, two goals and at least an assist, or maybe one goal and three assists. So I'm not sure that's going to happen for him. So I think Salah likely has that 92 rated Player of the Month card sort of locked up. Other events we have St. Patrick's Day likely coming up on maybe the third week. You could probably do a predicted start date of the 16th. That was actually a pretty fun promotion. We talked about it last pod, but a lot of pretty fun SBCs, and Irish players usually rise pretty sharply in price for that. And then finally, I mean, I actually shouldn't say that this is not going to be that eventful of a month, because at the tail end of it, we're probably going to have the release of Foot Birthday, which is always a really, really cool event. Really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that last year. So hopefully, I think the key thing is with these promotions now, I think EA just need to spice it up slightly. Recently, I think we haven't seen, apart from obviously not getting downgrades, we haven't really seen spiced up promotions. And if they just do something slightly to change it, but keep the sort of core aspects that people enjoyed from last year, then I don't see how they can do it wrong, to be honest.
Right, exactly. And also don't forget that we could get Scream Card boost on the on the 2nd and then the 31st of March. So
yeah,
maybe I've been a little bit harsh on this month. It could be a pretty exciting, fun-filled March, if you will. So I think my spidey senses tell me that you might have a review to round us off for the pod this week.
Yeah, I've got an interesting one, because someone that I bought and then sold and then bought back again because I enjoyed him very much. And actually, it's one of those things where in that sort of interim period, I was using some top equivalent players. So the player is 85 Rio Ferdinand, and I was using on loan Blanc and Desailly, both of which I used with Shadow. I was using Rio with Shadow as well. And the thing was, when you're talking about these prime icons, they all have such crazy defensive stats. You can kind of discount that itself. And even with Rio, you know, you're going to get 99s across the board, I think, apart from on interceptions, which is really high anyway.
Right.
So what you're really looking at is you're looking at pace and physicality. Now, Rio's actually not as physical as you'd expect. In fact, he's probably quite similar to Bailly in that sort of department. Mm. But as we know, Bailly's pretty good. And Rio's much bigger as a sort of body type. He also has 98 acceleration and 95 sprint speed with Shadow, which is just unbelievable.
Wow.
He'll keep up with your Cristiano Ronaldo's very top players. The only thing he lacks on is agility. And I was thinking with Blanc, because he's got better agility, maybe he'd be better. Mm. But actually, I'm not sure it makes that much of a difference. And because really you should be positioning your players effectively, you don't want to kind of move around with your centre-backs too much, I think.
Right.
It kind of doesn't matter that much, that he's slightly lower in agility. And he really is so much better than Desai purely because he's not going to misplace passes. And that's one of the reasons why I'd take him over, you know, your cheaper centre-backs like Bailly, because he is consistent at distributing from the back.
Right.
He's actually got a decent run on him. A couple of times I've just charged through an opposition team with him. Something about the way he controls the ball is actually quite good, and he's very consistent in terms of his distribution. So I've actually really enjoyed him, and I think he's really solid, really quick, allows you to play kind of a high pressing style, if you like. He really, really does a job that I enjoyed, but then didn't really appreciate until I'd used other players quite how good he was. So
yeah, it's very good. I'm surprised that you would compare him to someone like Desailly, or even, you know, the prime Desailly and prime Blanc. I mean, I know, especially with Desailly, he's like an endgame card for a lot of the high level pros. So I'm surprised that you're able to compare him and actually take the lower rated, you know, Not
it's interesting. I think the key thing with it is that Desailly is not as large as a body type. We were talking, I know, before we recorded this about Milinkovic-Savic's sort of grab circle, and I think Rio Ferdinand is much better than Desailly in that sense. He's more of a kind of wall. Desailly is someone who, you know, he's as good at chasing someone down because he's quick, but actually he's not as quick, and he's certainly not as much of a presence. So
right. Wow. Well, then honestly, on that recommendation, I might like to pick him up. How many in the trade pile do you have?
No, if only I had 10 mil to spend on it, then I would have that many.
All right. Well, I think that about does it for this week.
Yeah, it does. Are you outroing the show, considering I'm so bad at introing you? Is that what you decided to do?
Yeah, I figure I might as well just kind of step in there.
Because I just might not outro it.
Right, yeah. I mean, right.
Thanks very much, everyone. And of course, if you're listening on Foothead, you can subscribe using the links below. And you can also find us on your podcast providers. Search Foot Weekly. A lot of requests for us on Spotify. Unfortunately, Spotify have a carefully curated selection of podcasts, only about 8 gaming podcasts. Unfortunately, we won't be on there, but there are loads of other ways you can get us. Please do contact Spotify and tell them that they should definitely have us. I'm sure it will make a difference. But yeah, Jamie, where can people find you if they want to talk to you? The virtual medias.
Probably the best way is on Twitter. I'm most active on there, foot_economist, and then as well as YouTube. Haven't been as active as I maybe want to be on YouTube recently, but plan is to be reinvigorate that as soon as my run of midterms is over in the next couple of weeks. So.
Nice. Well, that brings us to a close then. Thank you very much to Chu and Jamie for joining me on both last week and this week's podcast. We hope you enjoyed them both. Please do rate and review this podcast. You can do that on the various podcast platforms. And of course, as always, get in touch, footweekly@mail.com or @footweeklypod on Twitter. We always read everything that we get, and we don't necessarily get to respond to everything, unfortunately, but we really do appreciate it when you send stuff in to us. Oh, and also, could have a very special podcast next week, although there may not be one at all. We have to see.